You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment.
Happy Thursday, the Good Time Gang is back for another episode of Side Quest Side Sesh. Normally, right before we start, I just think of something to talk about, but there's nothing going on up here these days. It's just like a bowl of spaghetti. And so I Googled right before we started.
Conversation starters?
Icebreaker question. And I saw one that I've never asked before. I don't think I've asked it.
Doubtful.
I know. After hundreds of episodes, we just had
400 plus bants.
I think it was like, I've heard this banter before, but I don't think I ever asked this one. And I'm modifying it slightly. But what was your favorite class in school? Ooh. Like your favorite subject? Ooh. I think that's a very telling one. What was your favorite class? Maybe it was the one you were best at. Probably you were good at. I don't think anybody liked the one that they sucked at. But not necessarily the one you were best at, but it was your favorite. And I will say recess and gym don't count. So it's got to be an academic class.
High school or all of school?
Be it from me to put any restrictions on this answer. But don't be weird.
Troy, can we say a class that we attended at the Learning Annex for adults?
Yes, because that definitely happened.
Okay, I'm not going to. I just thought I would clarify that for the other people.
That's very kind.
Yeah. I'll go. I loved history the most.
History?
Were there any particularly good history courses that you took?
All of history. I know I loved all of it. I like world history a little bit more than American history, although I like American history quite a bit too. Ask me any question about history, literally any question, and I will give you the correct answer.
Name all members of the Chicago Six.
How many were there? That is Chicago a fit, seven. That is seven. A phys ed question. I never watched the Chicago Six play, so I don't know what kind of hockey they did.
They won the pennant in 84.
what year was the defenestration of Prague?
That was in the I'm going to go 1548.
I don't think that's correct, right. But I don't know the answer.
16. It is.
Yep, you're right.
1483.
I had a lot of the same numbers.
That's not bad.
Jared. Also, I don't think, Matthew, that they cover the defenestration of Prague in high school history.
That's more
of a learning annex.
Is that where I learned it?
So Jared's pure love of history was evident and on display in our Time Watch game.
Yeah.
Like, if you get a chance and you haven't watched it before or listened to it, a new game, who dis, the Time Watch show was great. And Jared was just like digging into history. And it seemed like you had a ball with it because it was like actual historic events. And, you know, it's total quantum leapy.
You're like going also back on and display in our game garage GURPS. And we did realistic portrait of the Middle Ages England.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just me, man. I just love history. I just love games that's about cool. History. Yeah.
Did they call it social studies in grade school and then history in high school?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what we had social studies.
We had in middle school, they called it social studies and then it was history in high school.
Why did they call it social studies? Because it lumped in things other than history, right?
Like geography and civics and...
Because I think at that time when you're in elementary school, they're kind of teaching you like, here's how a government the U.S. government works, and like, here's what the post office is, you know, like that's part of history. It gets kind of lumped in
social studies.
Yeah.
What was yours, Joe?
In high school, mine was math. My favorite was math. I had
what a dork. What a nerd.
Give that loser a wedgie. Then punch him in the face.
I had a really, we had a known, excellent teacher in math. Actually, I'm sorry. That's not true. Overall, it was probably math, but for 1 year, and I only had it 1 year, it was physics. Physics was my favorite, like, class or subject. It was math and science together. It was like it the was greatest combo you could ever have. And I hated biology. Hated it. Because it was the same thing as English. Just like vocabulary and memorization, I always hated. I didn't like memorization. I liked equations and solving problems. That was just like the way that my mind worked.
Joe, I can't believe we have never talked about this because we are exactly the same.
Oh, really?
Yes, I loved math and I enjoyed chemistry. I didn't like biology because it was just memorizing shit. And I had a photographic memory because I didn't drink alcohol at that age. But I so I could memorize.
It was just
shit.
Memorizing 18 letter words for a plant penis. And like that's essentially what it was over and over every day.
And then
day.
Chemistry was cool, but then you got to physics and it was like, oh, this is just more math and like crazy hard math. I loved the harder math, the better. I had no idea about about this. Wow.
Yeah. You guys, that the answer physics was my favorite class is such a flex. You're basically like, it's also the really smart hard class. That was probably my favorite.
It's also honestly, I thought it was so much easier than biology. Like, oh my god, yeah, it was biology was impossible.
Remember the Punnett square
of the nerdy of the nerdy answers you could have given. That's the broiest nerdy answer you could have given imaginable. Physics is like science for bros.
Whatever. The only reason
nerd bros, but bros.
When I wasn't
physics, size of muscles.
Like, oh, things move and they go in a certain direction with vectors.
If science could punch a guy, that's what physics would be.
Yeah.
It actually is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What was yours, Matthew?
I mean, for me, it was so dependent on the teacher. Like, I had, like, when I had English, sure, but, like, I had, like, in high school, I had a succession of, like, really fantastic English teachers. Actually, I had a really fantastic calculus teacher, too. So, yeah, I would say history in high school. And then I had an amazing classics professor in college who was British and he had fought in the Falklands, but he got out and became a classicist. So he was all like, whenever we talked about like
the Trivial Pursuit answer, the Falklands. Yes, I would just say that because that's the only time I ever hear it. And it comes up a million times in Trivial Pursuit Falklands? As an answer, the Falklands conflict. The Falklands conflict.
It was actually in the news a lot back at the time.
Yes. Anyway, he was pretty fun because he was a great teacher, but he also would like, he got really into like the philosophy of like the Greeks when we got into anything working around war. And he was very anti-war, but he was very into the Greeks about war. It was great.
Mm. If I didn't know before you told me, I would have guessed classics mm-hmm. as your answer. If you were a comedian, after your rant, when I went to you, you would have been like, physics. And we
would have all laughed. I was trying to answer honestly and not lie.
It was like a good, it was a good bit there. Like timing wise, I felt it coming and you just had to be like, physics. Skid, round it out with you. What was your favorite class? I feel like we've said it already.
There are so many. I also am a huge history fan. I miss school. I loved school. I had not all school, but like some of the classes that I had, like I had so many that were great. I loved my Latin class in high school. But I think actually at my choice of the moment would be my eighth grade social studies class, in which I think I might have talked about it before. We played a role playing game for 2 weeks in the class called Dangerous Parallel, which was in use in a lot of like social studies programs like around in America, in which they split the class up into countries, like fictional countries. And each person would have like a role in that country, like, you know, president, minister of agriculture, like whatever. And they gave us a situation and I'm just like, what do you do? And that was 2 weeks of my life that it was incredible because I was already like, I was doing this stuff at home and to do it in school with like everybody, it was one of the most fun things ever. It was great.
I played diplomacy in high school history for a period of time, like the game diplomacy, like the board game.
Yeah, that's
diplomacy.
A great game too. I love that game.
I remember diplomacy.
I definitely changed completely in college because when I got into college, I didn't really have math. Like I had it in like my first year and it was just like kind of basic stuff. And I was in business school, so I was taking other things. And when I took my electives, I took astronomy, which was not fun and way harder than I thought. I thought it would just be fun and cool. And it was just hard as shit. And then what I really enjoyed most in college was philosophy. Philosophy and theology classes were awesome. And one of those, you just made me think of it, Skid. Probably my favorite individual class, and it was tough, was medical ethics. That was an awesome class. Ethics. Yeah, it was, and it was taught by a Jesuit. I went to a Jesuit school, and it was taught by a Jesuit priest that was on the panel at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, like the ethics board for like making decisions with people's lives. I mean, it was so intense, and like somebody's got to do it. You know what I mean? Like somebody has to make really tough ethical decisions, and where you pull your ethics from was a very interesting debate, because the people that sat on that board were not all religious, you know, that by design. Like it was all different sort of backgrounds of people that come together to make ethical decisions. I loved that class. It was
that
awesome.
Is fascinating. I love ethics. This is a concept, and kind of thinking about it, arguing about it is always interesting.
Well, last week you guys made some interesting ethical decisions on how to save Rufus of Opara's life.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What would the Jesuit priest have said about pissing on someone?
Do it.
Depends
do
which it. One you ask. Luckily, you guys all survived what could have been a real ugly situation. But while the battle with Little Jeshin came to a close, it seemed as if the war had just begun, because as the blood of this aardvark Fae-influenced human spilled on the ground of the vault, the ground began to tremble, the wall shattered, and you realize there wasn't endless amounts of treasure in there. These were just mirrors, and a chunk of the ceiling fell off, blocking the entrance into the vault, and all seven doors that were unlocked when you broke the puzzle of the Four Seasons. And beyond the mirrors are now just an endless series of tunnels. But the one thing that remained standing in the room was the pedestal, atop which sat a very ornate wooden circlet. The wooden circlet then speaks to you telepathically and explains that her name is Audho of Bhopan, and she was one of the warriors that fought against Quixal, Quxal, the Thorned Monarch. He went by many names. The Thorned Monarch, this malevolent fae that sought to destroy everything and wanted to take over Galarian. And so they built a demiplane all their own that they could like build up all their own magical energy and power. And the Bhopanese warriors came and took the source of that plane's power, the Perennial Crown. And Audho sacrificed herself to be the last remaining guardian of this crown, while all of her allies died to kind of keep Quixal safe, to keep him from not being able to exercise his power anymore in Galarian. But with the opening of the vault, Quixal has arisen, and though he does not have the crown, he will stop at nothing to get it. And so Audho has...
Where is he?
Audho told you gotta get out of here. Now what?
Wait, question about the vault. You said there's because when the mirrors came down, there wasn't endless treasure, but is there some treasure that was being reflected?
No.
Troy can't even finish his recap before Joe is like, where is Quixel? And he's like, before we get into that, is there any treasure from last time? Because... Troy, when you're done with treasure, I want to talk about healing again, just for a little while.
Look, my question and its aggressive nature are warranted, because it's ridiculous. We've asked multiple times, and this goddamn crown is not being very clear. Is this Thorned Monarch in the vault somewhere coming for the crown? Or is it out in the world and just senses that the crown is now, the vault is open? You know what I mean? I thought that maybe it was trapped down here. And I asked that question, and I still don't think it was answered. So that's why I'm saying, where is he, according to the crowd? Out in the world or somewhere in this vault?
Yeah, Troy, quit reviewing pertinent information and answer the question.
Odd-ho, if you ask again during your nine-hour rest, she says...
Baldasso is working very hard during those nine
hours. It's not a rest. It's like 9 hours of an ER episode. Okay?
It's drinking lemonade.
Yeah, it's 9 hours of don't you die on me.
Just slamming Rufus's chest.
Clear!
Otto says they are here. They are here.
Thank you. So we have, there's no time to rest. Let's move. There's
no time to rest.
9 hours and 1 minute later. All right. There's no time to rest. We got to go.
And at 9 hours and 2 minutes.
The ceiling could collapse at any moment.
Is there any treasure in this room?
No, there's no treasure. It was all an illusion to make you mad.
It was an illusion and mirrors.
Yes. Oh. Yes.
The mirror suggests it's reflecting something against something.
Yes, it was all magic.
Champ is going to lean over close to Balthazar so that he can't be heard by the others. And he's going to say, there is a piece of treasure here. It's on Karazor's head.
That's me, because Otto speaks telepathically, so she's a part of the conversation. I'm the one on his head. What are we talking about?
What are you worth?
What are you worth?
If I sold you in a market...
Not you personally, but the wooden
crown,
shell.
The crown.
I am priceless, as is the crown.
Should we take it?
What, me?
Stop. Could you give us a moment, please?
Sorry.
How are we supposed to scheme?
If I haven't talked to anyone in hundreds of years.
Me neither.
And all you do is sleep.
No, I didn't sleep. I couldn't stop thinking about where he was, where they were. We have to choose a tunnel.
Wait, before we leave, Troy, can my character pick up a shard of glass and some stones?
Sure.
It's just the kind of weird thing players always ask me.
It's so true. It's so true.
And I'm like, yeah.
Go for it.
Okay.
And guys, then in the big boss fight, they're like, I pull out the shard and the dirt. Does it give me any extra powers against the final boss? No. They thought okay. It's trash.
All right. My character has a glass and rocks you guys. Okay, go ahead.
Must be real torture for you guys that know the entire adventure and everything that's happening to look down on us as we
just ready to take some
struggle against the mountain of your adversity. But must be real painful for you to
Joe
deal
just
with.
Just gonna take some mirror shards.
I'm gonna take some mirror shards just in case.
In our defense, you guys read the flavor text and it makes everything seem like enchanted and powerful.
Everything sounds important.
It sounds important. I guess we should take that.
It's my flavorful language.
Yeah. You never know.
Otto, which tunnel should we take? Otto, are you there?
Oh, I was told not to listen. I'm sorry, I can't lie. I listen to everything. I think that you should just start and move forward. The only way to discover a possible way out is the first step. Make sure you gather shards and debris from the ground. We must...
Until you are
encumbered.
Spend
an hour gathering shards
and
debris.
Until you are over-encumbered on your character sheet.
Take six bulk of trash.
So are there like three tunnels? Are there four?
Are there seven? Are there 16?
You look up ahead and like to the east and the west, it looks like one sort of curls, like it could curl to the one in the north. So you think, okay, that one is probably going to all go to the same place. And in fact, the one to the east looks like it ends pretty shortly. So I imagine if you have 9 hours, you're kind of like maybe poking your head in and you see the one to the west is no go. And the one to the east leads to the center one, but the center one sort sort of splinters out. Now, I alluded last week that a lot of this is going to be flavor, so you pretty much just have to say, we're ready to go in the tunnels.
All right. I'll use my gnollish power of scent to determine that the center passageway is the correct one. And I says, follow me! Follow your new king!
We have a king and we have a leader of the band. The four of you, along with Otto, who sits now atop Karazor's head, begin entering this labyrinthine maze of tunnels. Some look like they've been there forever, like the vault was built to be a longer, larger vault, but some look to be new, as if whatever quake caused the walls to shatter and the ceiling to collapse has created new tunnels as well. And so as you go through, you realize after maybe an hour or so of walking around that there's no way to get past the floor up ahead has like collapsed, and it just looks like it goes hundreds of feet down. So you need to either use acrobatics to sort of balance along the thin ledges around these holes, or athletics to scale across the jagged walls that remain. And each of you need to make a check.
I'm gonna scale.
Okay.
Karazor scaling deftly across the chasm with a 24.
Okay. And anybody else using athletics to scale?
Yeah, I think I'll use athletics. Yeah, I will.
Okay. Miro?
22.
Okay. Anybody else using athletics or acrobatics to try and balance along the thin ledges that have been left behind?
I will use acrobatics to balance along the thin edges.
Okay.
That have been left behind.
Okay. There were ledges.
Ledges. Edges. Ledges.
Alleged. There were a couple ledges.
I thought
alleged
I said
edges.
Alleged ledges.
These alleged ledges. I'll go across them.
Okay. What'd you roll?
I rolled a 22. 25.
25. Okay. And lastly, Rufus of Opara.
Rufus. His Eidolon has a glider form.
Oh.
Meaning he can glide on wings that travel 5 feet down and up 25 feet forward through the air. Would that get him across?
It would, but we would still have to use... I would still want an acrobatics check from the dragon.
Oh, dear. Okay. Not loving that. So
it's probably better than your acrobatics.
Well, maybe. I don't see where I have skills exactly. Maybe it's in the. I don't want to make this go on too long. I don't know that that Velth Rexenbob is up for it. So my choices are athletics or acrobatics.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to try athletics, and that means I'm skirting along the ledges. Is that right?
Athletics, no, you're scaling along like the jagged remains on the walls.
All right, I'm scaling the jagged remains on the walls. Here we go. Let's fail a check. 17.
Okay. You know, this is a team effort. So while some of you are more deft at these skills than others, you're all able to help each other and get across the majority of these pits in order to delve deeper into what remains of the vaults. And as you're crossing over these pits, you see these go hundreds and hundreds of feet down, and you're already deep below the ground, and you have to think, the eyes that you may see from time to time looking up at you are either a figment of your imagination or horrible creatures from the Darklands. You keep moving forward, and now, luckily, there are no more treacherous pits to deal with, but you see, like, massive thorny roots that are, like, 6 feet in diameter that have burrowed through the walls of the vault, creating a tangle of brambles that blocks moving forward. So, you know, maybe you go another hour or so after you navigate all these pits, but now your way is blocked by these roots that are going straight through walls that look like they were built specifically for the vault. So you need to either use nature to try and figure out something about these roots, or survival to pick your way through the thorns.
Each of us need to do this? Or
yeah, each of you need to do it.
Is it dark here?
Yeah, it is kind of dark.
Well, those are two skills based on wisdom, if I'm not mistaken. So the unwise are going to be in rough shape here.
it's not great for Balthazar. But I'll roll.
I will say these are group actions, so you succeed and fail as a group.
I see. Oh, okay.
All right, Balthazar is going to do survival.
Okay.
Yeah, Karazir will as well. He's looking at this. This is like, this is some fey bullshit. It's more than a mile away. Fuck this shit.
18 for Balthazar.
Okay.
What'd you get there, Karazir?
9.
This is a fey bullshit.
Champ has never seen anything remotely like this in his known life. He got a 3.
A 3. Okay. And so it all comes down to Rufus of Opara.
I rolled nature and I got a 17.
There you go.
17. All right. So you begin trying to make your way through these roots, trying to figure out maybe there's something about these roots that you could do to make them retract. And it's tough going. But you start to make your way through. However, you get about halfway through, and as you're disturbing these roots, you look over and the roots seem to be coming alive, and they're all reaching out in the direction of Karazor's head to try and remove the crown. You are able to, as a group, help Karazor through, help each other through, and evade these living roots. However, it doesn't stop you from taking significant damage as you do so, and you all take 17 points of piercing damage struggle to get away from these roots that are
living.
Wait, we gotta stop for another 9 hours. Anyone hold up?
Let's just hold up in this thorny root patch. But you are all certain they were just going for Karazor, and they were just going for the crown, and so you rush to get out of there, and as you do so, you take some damage. Oof. Get away from that.
We must stop and heal. And I'm going to heal myself with a touch of corruption.
Okay.
Yeah, if we're going to stop for 10 minutes, how long does it take?
For 10 minutes, yep.
Great. I'll treat wounds on... I'll treat wounds on myself.
Yeah.
And get it.
Okay. Yeah, if you have any fast healing like that, you can do it fast-ish.
Okay. So just 10 minutes, one person, or did anybody else? Can we do 20 minutes? Anybody?
If you must.
I shall now hear arguments from both Rufus of Opara and Karazor as to why I should spend this 10 minutes healing you and not the other.
Well, if the king dies, political chaos. The system would not survive. Sorry, Rufus, but, you know, even when Jim Morrison died, doors kept going.
I tend to agree. It's all bullshit, man. Heal whoever you want. I don't give a damn.
Wow. And your reverse psychology works on Balthazar and he heals Rufus. and I get it. you heal 12 hit points.
Great.
Okay, very cool.
After all these years of playing, I still cannot escape my brain's wanting to go to the construction. You heal X points of damage. It's like,
oh yeah,
this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, Nick Lowe always says that.
Yes.
You continue forward, a little battered, a little pierced, but a little healed as well. And you've made some progress. In fact, you start to smell air. It was very stale, like parts of the vault that hadn't been exposed to the outside in a long time. But as you traverse forward, as you get deeper throughout this maze, you start to smell the fresh air. You start to maybe even hear sounds in the distance, so you feel like you're getting closer. However, you turn a corner at one point, and you see people. You see a small contingent of these canine-featured Bopanese guards that appear to have wandered into the passage up ahead. And you're watching this. You basically turn the corner. Whoever's up in front, who do you think is, like, scouting for this party?
I think Champ would be up in front, but I'm not a scout. I'm more of just, like, I've got a shield.
You're the vanguard, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so you're going up there, and if it's a very, let's say it's a very thin corridor, right, and you're walking up with the shield, and you turn the corner, maybe you tell everybody to hold, and you see these guards, like, wandering in, looking around, not unlike you, like, trying to find a way out, but they're on the opposite side of this corridor, and they're wandering into what looks like this sanguine haze that fills the air. And as they wander into it, they, like, start shaking and like, cracking their necks and whatnot, and then suddenly they turn on each other, and they start, attacking each other in confusion, and, like, you can tell that they don't really know what they're doing. They just start tearing at each other. What do you do here? You've got some options, and I'm going to give you what they are. You could use diplomacy to try and be like, what are you guys doing? Maybe you could use intimidation to try and assert your dominance over them, or maybe even a performance to try and rouse them from whatever confusion they're under. What do you want to do?
We're a band. We got to
stand back.
The only rouse thing that them, can, Rufus. Rouse
the only
them.
Thing that can rouse them is music.
Rouse them, man. They need it.
Karazor was the king of a kingdom of dust. Ashes and spit and piss.
Okay, I'm going to roll performance, okay?
Yep, great.
Here it goes.
Ashes and spit and piss.
25.
25.
Nice.
From Obara.
God, what
anybody
a great
else,
song.
Performing? I imagine Karazor wants to use intimidation here.
Your stand-up comedy.
That's true. Yeah, I'm gonna warm up. I'll do a warm up comedy set before the performance.
All right, so good. What do you say?
All right, it's like, hey, you ever notice when you're fighting your friends and when you walk into a sanguine haze, that sometimes your fly is open? Oh look! Oh look! I still have my wiener out, so he's like,
for the past 14 hours.
Yeah. So, yeah, he falls back on the blue stuff. So he, like, zips up, he's like, and I rolled a 3. So,
all right, you roll a 3 and fail. What are you doing, Balthazar the Mild?
Balthazar is not much of a performer, so he will have to go intimidate. And he will do so by going into gorilla stance and showing off some of his moves.
Ah, okay. Give me that intimidation roll.
Natural 2 for a 7.
Man.
Yikes. Oh, boy. On bikes. Champ, it might be up to you here. Obviously, Rufus roused them.
Could I use deception? Could I use deception to try to fool them into thinking that there's, you know... He'll say something like, "There he is, the Emperor. He lives. Run that way."
Here's what I'll tell you. I'll say you
so
can use it.
So they focus on their, who they're supposed to be guarding?
But it's a higher DC than the skills that I gave you.
Sounds good. All right, here we go. He's going to try to deceive them into thinking that their quarry is ahead and they need to stop fighting each other. That won't do it. Was your DC heightened to 14?
Oddly enough, was not. And so you guys get up there. Rufus is jamming. I imagine this is all happening semi-simultaneously. Balthazar is doing the gorilla stance. Karazor is shaking his wiener. And Champ gets up there and says, "Hey, look over there." And suddenly the sanguine haze starts to fill the room and come towards your corridor.
Oh, no.
And you steal your mind. Start feeling crazy.
No!
And you all black out. Let's take a quick break and see what happens. And next! You wake up and you've all taken 11 points of damage.
Oh.
And you wake up and you're all covered in blood. And you look over and you see all of the Bobanese guards dead and like chopped to bits. And you look down at your hands and your weapons and you're all covered in blood. Oof. And you're lying on the ground. Your weapon maybe like a foot away from you. Everything is covered in blood.
Champ, what did you do, man?
It's not my blood.
Champ, why did you kill all these people?
It wasn't me. It wasn't me. I blacked out. It must have been
you're
you.
You're the only one here that doesn't bleed. It had to be you.
Oh.
He looks around. He has a plus one to will saves for mental manipulation. I'm going to roll it. He gets a 22. So he doesn't believe you. He's
Couldn't have been. It couldn't have been. I've never blacked out like that before and fought. I must have just dropped to the ground. Stop. Why are you accusing me? It could have been them. It's probably them.
And he points at all the dead guards.
I'm going to need you to hand your kukri over to Rufus.
Wait, no, I remember. No. I remember. The guards came over to fight us and I killed them all. No!
And he's backing up.
Don't take my kukri! It's so good! It's so good!
And he's backing up against the wall. He could feel the magic's running through him the second he got that bloodletting kukri. Dude, that shit goes from me hitting... Oh, man. It's a plus one to hit, and it's striking. That shit is a huge bone. Wow. I'll kill myself. My character will slit his own throat before he turns that kukri over.
You don't bleed. That would do nothing. Man.
He'll do it. He'll just jam it into his spinal neck bone. Break my head off.
All right. Give him the kukri. Come on.
I'll do it, man.
All right, keep the kukri.
Look what that sanguine cloud did. It's turning us against each other, guys. Come on, stop.
It felt like my music was having a strong effect on them. And then Karazor did some stand-up comedy that didn't make a lot of sense.
I didn't read the crowd, all right? That's on me.
Look, it might have not made sense.
Wrong material for the wrong room.
But
I can't deny that.
I laughed. I think I heard one of them laugh.
I got one of them real good.
Everyone laughs when they see a wiener. They laugh.
Yeah. I mean, come on, you guys were laughing. Well, you weren't. You were unconscious.
I'm picking through the bodies, see if there's anything interesting.
You pick through the bodies. They have all basic weapons on them, but you do notice one of the guards had on his belt I might be mispronouncing this, a mambale, which is like a hungamunga. Type knife. It's like a knife axe, basically. It's got a hilt and a blade that curves backwards towards the wielder. The way it's described here is the curve of the blade is such that after a victim has been struck by a mambale, more damage is dealt as the weapon is extracted from the victim's body. And this one has intricate wild orchid etchings all over the hilt. Beyond that, nothing really jumps out at you.
All right. I found this mambale.
How did these...
only fair that I keep it.
Okay.
And I put it in my belt loop.
Looks awesome.
Otto. Yeah, Otto. Is this the kind of fell magic that Quicksilver will be sending against us in the final confrontation?
I know not, but these roots are their doing. They are awakening, and their power is growing the closer they get to their quarry, which is me, the crown. We should continue forward without healing.
Do you know what happened here? Balthazar asked. Were you conscious when we all failed? We all blacked out. He asked while spending some 10 minutes to heal himself.
I was, but it is unclear whether or not I can see. I feel as if I just feel, and all I felt was 8 voices crying out at once.
What were they saying?
They were screaming, and one was crying. It sounded like a skeleton crying. That's the only thing that reminded me of.
I heard the sound of a weeping skeleton. Really? Once you hear it, you'll never forget.
A really pathetic sound like skeleton.
What does that sound the like? Most what do you pathetic. Mean? How is that different? How does, what do you mean, skeleton sound? Crying. It doesn't make any sense.
I could hear chattering teeth amidst the crying. It was definitely a skeleton weeping openly.
Yeah. You can't be brave without fear, okay? Chattering just means you're a little scared. It doesn't mean you're crying.
It was calling for its mommy, too. It was very strange. But beyond that, I did not. I don't know what happened.
This will remain a mystery forever. Let us go.
Let's continue to the next skill challenge.
And so,
but
you,
not before we stop and heal.
You push forward with your new mambalé, your shiny hunkamunka.
Is that a simple weapon that I could use?
I believe so. It actually can be thrown as well. I think it has a range of like 20 feet. Truth be told, the wild orchid etchings may give it some extra powers if anyone has access to the, where the fuck is it, Lost Omens Gods and Magic book.
Page Hell one. Yeah, I do. I love that book.
Yeah, I have it. I just don't have it on me. Page 120. Mambalé with, look at this guy. I said wild orchid etchings. It's just orchid etchings. I'm thinking of that softcore HBO movie, Wild Orchid with Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
That was a great movie.
That was a good movie.
Back in the day.
I like
it. It's a great movie for a 13-year-old.
Gods and Magic, page 113.
Sneak watch. Gods and Magic. Lost Omens, Gods and Magic, page 120 is what Oddho says.
And what's it called?
It's a mambalé with orchid etchings.
It's an uncommon martial melee weapon.
It's martial. I can't use it.
Oh, wow. It's in the axe group, and it's got the disarm, deadly D8, and thrown 20 feet breaks.
Ooh, deadly D8. That's fun.
And yet, sure it's hanging from my belt. I claimed it.
That's true. It's canon.
Okay.
All right. Let's push forward. And push forward, you do. As I mentioned, you could start to smell the air outside, perhaps, but you move forward what's left of these tunnels, and that slight glimpse of a smell of fresh air is overpowered by a gagging stench that begins to permeate this once grand vault. And you see the decorated walls and ornate tile floor standing in stark contrast to a wall up ahead, which has been utterly obliterated by another massive entanglement of roots. And immediately you see what the source of this odor is. An exposed sewer line on the far side of the wall that's visibly choked with debris and filth has now been ripped wide open from these roots that have come through. So you realize that this root, these roots haven't been growing for a long time. This is a new development, and the stink is horrible. And you enter into this room and you see that stink, and then suddenly you see bodies start to walk out of the sewer tunnel, and one of them is wearing a crown. It's King Wubikis,
and he that's what I was saying, the king. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
He has on either side of him one of his honor guard, and they are both, or all three of them rather, are covered in blood and some minor scratches, but you see the king's face is like a mask of blood running all the way down his beautiful multicolored robes. And they enter the room that you had just entered into, and their weapons are drawn. And you guys, basically, you're all kind of entering at the same time, and they see you. And Oddho speaks just to you, you would hope, with like a sense of urgency. And she says, "Beware. I sense Quixal's twisted presence. their spite and malice like a briar patch that chokes the thought from the minds of my fellow Bopanese. And right when she finishes saying that, Wabikis and the two honor guard turn towards you. And Wabikis, remember he's got those bat-like ears, he like lifts his head up and an inhuman roar comes out of his mouth and he just charges at you with deadly abandon. Roll for initiative.
Okay.
Whoa.
Right.
What is going on?
Is it like,
are they being corrupted or like, were they the bad guys all along? Like, were they...
They're being corrupted.
Oh, they are. Okay.
Quicksoul has cast some sort of enchantment on them.
Yeah, he's doing this.
He's doing it.
I've put you on the map there. We got a new map. Go ahead and rearrange yourselves any way you want in those four spaces. And I know, Champ, you had said you wanted to be up front, so if you want to switch with Balthazar or Karazor, feel free. I figured Rufus would be in the back.
Yep. Gotta hang out in the back.
Yeah, let's put Champ up like a good like 20, 30 feet ahead of us towards King Wabikis. I think that's only fair based on what Joe was saying.
Leave enough space for like another collapse to happen between you and the rest of your friends.
That's what I think. I think strategically that's our best move. Tactically.
But we don't... I don't see King Wabikis.
Nor do
He's
I.
He's up in the northern, northeastern you can, corner.
You can only see what you can see because there is pillars in the middle of the room. So Karazor has
yeah,
a bit
but
of a
you
view.
Said he charged at us and we saw it.
Well, he charged, but we'll see if he rose a higher
All
initiative.
All right, let's move us on the map then to where it's accurate.
to where we can see him.
Stop it. basically, he goes, roll for initiative. All right, what did everybody get? Let's start with Champ.
17 for Champ.
17 for Champ.
For the Champ.
Okay, Rufus of Opara.
27.
27 for Rufus of Opara. Karazor.
23.
Oh, this is nice. That's so easy. And Balthazar.
How would you feel about me making the argument that at the moment we rolled initiative, Balthazar was stretching and thus could use his athletics for an initiative roll?
You're embarrassing yourself in front of your friends.
Because otherwise I rolled a 7.
Oh, boy.
You know, I would allow that if you're like, Balthazar is always stretching while he walks.
If we ever pause, like if we ever not like actively walking, Balthazar is stretching. That's how you gotta keep that 7,000-year-old automaton body limit. Yeah.
What is that burning wheel mechanic where you like you say something that you're always doing?
Your instincts.
Yeah.
Like you pre-say something to GM. You're like, whenever I'm walking in a tunnel, I always have my shield raised. You know what I mean? Whatever right, yeah. it is. It's like your instinct.
Yeah.
You don't have to say it every time. Yeah.
That was my favorite part of that system. All right. It's round one, and it is Rufus's turn. I have begun the encounter. You do see them. Maybe some of you don't see them, but Champ and Karazor do. What do you do?
Rufus says, "We're gonna have to fight for our lives. I'm gonna unleash the dragon!"
No! Screams Champ.
His chest starts smoking, his tattoo starts smoking, and Velthrexin Bob thrusts forth out of his chest three actions to disgorge the worm from his torso. And that done, he ends his turn.
Does Velthrexin Bob get to act?
Oh, yes! Velthrexin Bob gets to do something, and I think he only gets to do, like, one thing. So, let's see.
Just want to glide over there.
Yeah, but I don't want to just move into...
right,
I want
like
to just
punching
move
bag.
Into their range. Yeah, right. that feels foolish. So I'm going to, let's see, manifest Eidolon. And can take a single action. That's correct. I'm not going to have him do any. You know what I'm going to have him do? I'm going to have him go up and get beside our friend Champ to kind of be vanguard as well.
I love that. So he just kind of like pushes his way past the others to stand right next to Champ. And it is Karazor's turn.
Karazor, I think I have to delay because I can't get to them and do anything. So I'm going to wait for them to make their move.
I like it. Let them come. Don't let us waste our move actions. Let them waste their move actions.
Yeah. I'm playing hard to get.
Okay. then it goes to Champ.
also going to delay.
Also,
do you see them? I can't see anything. I hear them, but I can't see them, man.
Oh, they're right there. You should see them. They look so cool, but really scary.
Ah! And he's like looking with his skeleton holes and can't see anything.
Very good. All right. Well, then it is King Wabiki's turn, and the king is going to move. Let's see here. King is going to slide up to right behind that pillar in the middle. There's two pillars. There's a pillar like right to your right, and then there's a pillar in the middle of the room. So right now, probably only Champ, maybe Velthrexenbob, and maybe Balthazar can see, but the way he's positioned, Karazor and Rufus. Yeah, Balthazar can see. Actually, Velthrexenbob can't, and Champ. Just Champ and Balthazar, according to my stuff. So he moves up, and then he's going... That's his first action. His second action, he's going to use this fucking sick action called Squad Tactics. Wabikis directs his guards to a more strategic position. Each guard can spend their reaction to stride. So the guards will burn their reactions, and they will come right up.
They don't have reactions, because they haven't gone yet.
Oh, that's right. Right, they gain their reactions at the start of their turn.
I'll just be back here dancing.
I just got lawyered.
Oh, man.
But physics honestly, is my favorite class.
Just have Wabiki's delay. I mean, you could have Wabiki's delay and then hit the deal.
Yeah, that's my fault for misreading it. Obviously, what I would have done is had Wabiki's delay, have the guards go, and then Wabiki's use that. Now I have a headache just thinking about that.
Wow. Math was your favorite subject, Joe.
So I'm just going to take it back because I can. And I'm going to have the guards go instead because they both go before Balthazar. So guard number one is going to move 25 feet and then move another 25 feet right up to Velthrexenbob and Balthazar. And then it's going to go and hit, Velthrexenbob and Champ, and is going to swing a club at Champ. And that is going to be a 20 to hit.
Ah, that is a hit.
No.
No.
Very little damage. Minimum damage, 5 points of bludgeoning damage. The other one is going to do something similar, but it's going to kind of peel off to the side and then kind of stay straight on line with Balthazar. And he's going to shoot a crossbow at you.
And
Balthazar
miss. Or Champ?
I keep saying Balthazar, but I meant Champ. So that was Champ and missed with an 11. And now, you know what? Now I'm going to do... I'm going to have King Wabiki's go now. And King Wabiki's...
I mean, it's so dirty. So if we realize that rule as players, would we get to just retcon and not do our turn?
It's like
turn?
A five-second rule. With
I can tell you that players constantly try to do those things.
You know what Wabiki's going to do? He's going to stand behind that pillar, and I bet
can
that
I
only...
Can I take my turn first?
Before Wabiki's?
Oh, yeah. We're going before him. Yeah.
All right. That's fine. That's what we call in the business a compromise,
rules
or the rules. All right. So Karazar, you go first after the guards.
I will go. Let me go first. Sure. So I'm going to go, and Champ is going to move. Actually, I don't know if these guards have AOOs. So he's going to step up, and he will swing his bloodletting kukri at this guard.
Okay.
And that is going to be a 21 to hit.
21's a hit.
Oh, beautiful. So he'll hit with the new kukri and do 9 points of damage, slashing damage. And then he will raise shield.
Then he will raise shield. Okay.
Great.
Karazor.
Karazor is, he would incur if they have AOOs. He's going to move through Velthrexenbob's space to flank the guard
and that guy,
friend Champ.
He will take an attack of opportunity.
Oh,
And so he'll just
but
he'll
that uses his reaction.
It sure does.
So he's not going to be able to move out of this horrible position.
He'll swing his club. That's a 19 to hit. Probably a miss, right?
That is a miss.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So I am going to do a power attack when I get into flanking position with the guard.
Oh, brutal.
Fuck. That's a 17 to hit against flat-footed AC.
That is a hit against flat-footed AC.
Okay. Karazor.
Oh, nice. 13, 15, 16, that is 24 points of damage.
And that is a dead guard.
Yes! There we go!
And you hear Oddho say, "No, my people."
Oh, no.
And the guard dies. And now it's Wabiki's turn. And Wabiki's... Jeepers, what should I have Wabiki's do? You know what? I'm going to have him move directly behind that killer. Yeah, that's what I'm going to have him do. And then I'm not going to have him do anything else because this encounter is a sloppy mess now. No, he is going to move behind that pillar and then cast a spell. Let me see. Can you see him? Yeah, if you can see him, then I can see him. He's going to cast a spell. Yeah. I'm going to cast a spell on Champ. So it's going to be a spell attack. Let me see.
Oh, and I will have cover from a spell attack.
Yep, and it's going to be a 31 to hit.
Oh, that's not going to matter. At least,
least it won't crit. Is it not a crit?
It is not a crit. Well, I have my shield raised, so.
Okay, so it is going to be, I will roll it right here, 19 points of acid damage.
So can I?
And 1d6 persistent acid damage.
Oh! That what? Persistent damage is dangerous, dude.
Yeah, that is brutal. Okay. Sorry, I just want to look at the option of possibly shield blocking this. But I want to just out of curiosity. Yeah, I'm going to shield block.
That might eat your shield.
You said 19 points of damage?
19 points of acid, yeah.
19 points of acid. Okay, so he'll lower that to 14 points of damage. And, oh man. So he lowers it to 14 points of damage, and acid starts melting his steel shield. It just starts disappearing right in front of you.
That's cool.
And and then he's got to take persistent.
Yeah, he'll take persistent.
You put it on me already? Yes,
I did, yeah, which is great. It'll just, if nothing else, remind us where we're using hard dice, because we're not playing a video game. And now it is Balthazar's turn.
Okay, Balthazar is going to use his incredible monk movement, and he's going to stride up through Champ space.
Wait, I'm burning, help me!
Oh, sorry, I'm a barber!
And he can, I'm a barber!
He just runs by.
And he can avoid the attack opportunity from the other guard, but he's going to get up right next to King Wabiki's, and he is going to attempt to grab him.
Ah, you love this move. You love it.
Well, you'll see why in a second, if this works. Let's see what I roll.
Unhand me!
Okay, that's a natural 15 for a 26 against your fortitude DC.
That is a grab. That is a successful grab.
Whoa.
Okay, so that's two actions. And then as part of my... When I successfully grapple a creature, I can use my monk ability... Crushing Grab to deal bludgeoning damage to the creature equals my strength modifier, and I can make this attack non-lethal with no penalty. So Balthazar is going to rush up to King Wabiki's and put him in a sleeper hold and go... Go to sleep, Your Majesty.
Wow. Okay, so how much damage?
It's okay, little baby.
He takes 4 points of non-lethal damage.
4 points of non-lethal damage. Shout out to Foundry. When I put grabbed on there, it immediately gave him the flat-footed condition and the immobilized condition.
Oh,
and
man.
All of his stats were quickly changed.
And then with my final action, I'm going to attempt an intimidate check to demoralize the other, the remaining guard.
And oh, interesting. Okay.
I have your king, and I could snap his neck, or I could make him go to sleep. It's your choice.
Give me that intimidation check.
8.
yeah, whatever power is clouding his mind, he does not listen to you, believe you, or care. That is the end of round one. It now goes to round two. Rufus of Opara!
All right. We're going to have Beltharexin Bob move up to the other guard and, whisper under his breath,
long have I crushed the kingdoms of the Fae beneath my talons.
And then he is going to attack with a claw attack. And
get him.
Get him.
Get him. Get him. Do it. Make him hurt. All right, here we go. That is a 26 to hit.
26. And now, did you provoke, or were you able to slide in there without...
No, he had to provoke to get into that spot.
All right, really?
Let me just resolve. Unless you want to move straight up to him instead of to the side.
No, that's. I need to learn these things the hard way. Go ahead and AOO me.
You're not a member of the Glass Cannon Network? They'd never do that. I missed with an 11.
Even
unless
the
it
GM
has a...
retcons are to avoid AOOs.
I don't fear.
Retcons non-optimal moves. Wait, that move wasn't optimal.
That's
gonna redo
how
my
I learn.
Turn. Yeah.
Okay, and let's see. Right. Okay, and so let's see. We've got one action left. And the dragon's going to attack again, and he's going to... we're actually going to act together. The dragon's going to attack, and my friend Rufus is going to do something. What is he going to do? He's just going to move. So the dragon attacks again with a multiple attack penalty.
What was the first attack? How much damage was it?
The first attack? Oh,
did it hit?
I should have told you. It did. It rolled a 26.
Oh, that's actually a critical hit.
Oh, there you go.
So double damage.
Yeah, double damage. Okay, let me roll the damage. Here we go. You'd think I'd be ready to do this kind of thing. You'd think I waited an entire turn. Oh my god. I rolled an 8, so that's a 24 damage.
24 damage.
Goodness.
You straight up killed him on one attack.
Sweet. Oh my god.
Velthrex and Bob is fearsome.
Great. Velthrex and Bob is crushing the kingdoms of the Fae beneath his talents. And then he
so you
immediately
up,
bravely moves up. This is his final action, but he's acting together with Rufus. He's moving up into melee with King Wabikis, and Rufus is using this opportunity to move up as well, where he can maybe get the king in spell range. Okay, that's it. That's my turn.
All right, so you
nice
move up.
Nice turn.
You dispatch with the other guard. Two of the guards are now dead, and you hear yet again Otto let out an audible, "No, yeah. My people, we must spare the king." But do all of you have non-lethal options that will be enough? Because all it takes is one mistake, and you can kill the king! Let's see what happens next week!
Oh, no!
Yeah!
No!
Yeah!
I'm killing him.
We have a new king now, Troy.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a new king.
Long live the new king.
The king left us.
I'm tired of these Noel Savior narratives.
Kingdom of Ashes and Piss.
Thanks for listening to the Glass Cannon Network. For more podcasts and live streams, visit glasscannonnetwork.com. And for exclusive shows and content you can't find anywhere else, subscribe today at patreon.com/glasscannon.